You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to a Victory Monday episode of Locked On Seahawks. I'm Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman, who picked the Seahawks and Eagles game correctly. He didn't get the score right, but they won. The Seahawks won. Spike called it, even though a lot of people were pessimistic. Spike was the fork in the road of optimism.
I did pick the Seahawks by 17. They won by 14. So on the whole, I'm actually pretty disappointed in that performance. Not at all. That was incredible. That was the first complete game of the season from the Seahawks, which was really, it was an opportune time to do it. Everything this week broke in such a way that this game sort of was the flux point for the season. Winning this game puts them in such great position. They can afford to lose one of the next two now and then win out otherwise. I mean, look, the goal is still run the table. As Evan on Hawkblogger has been saying,
run the damn table.
Yeah, run the beep table. You know what I mean? I don't know how family friendly we got to keep this, but I'll say that 11-5 is where we need to get. We've got two more very winnable games. We've got two more coin flips, as it were. So we're just in a great position now. I mean, and really, what we saw tonight was the team play at such a high level. It was so great to see the defense not make mistakes, to not have a bunch of drive-extending penalties, to see the special teams just be effective. John Ryan wasn't great. A lot of punts were getting down right around the 20 rather than the 10, and given that it's 2017 and punting has gotten crazy good over the last 3 years, that's not quite good enough, but that's really nitpicking on an otherwise really solid performance from the special teams. Blair Walsh made his kicks, no questions asked. And then the offense, man, you had a couple real runs from Mike Davis. You had another really great performance from Russell Wilson against a very good defense. And I think you can't say enough about how much Dwayne Brown has changed what this offensive line is.
I think we hit the nail on the head when we're off air and we just said that the team executed the whole night. And leading up to this game, I was saying that, you know, the Seahawks are going to need a complete performance because we've seen the Eagles come out slow on Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys. Of course, they had that second half, but there was no kind of second half that they had. They had the one incredible drive from Carson Wentz. But, you know, outside of that, the Seahawks looked dominant in all phases of the game. Philly's run game looked good at times, and I even nodded to that on Twitter, but you know, in no point of the game were the Seahawks trailing. They beat them wire to wire.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that in December, we lean on these games to kind of propel us into the postseason. I think that this could be the launching pad for the Seahawks going down the final stretch of the season.
Yeah, and execution's the big thing. It was another week with a reasonable amount of penalties. Frankly, there could have been more penalties on us, fewer on them. If anything, the rub of the refereeing went our way. You know, we have what I'm calling the forward pasteurisk on that weird hook and ladder play that, yeah, probably went forward, but they could have challenged it and they didn't. So that is 100% on Doug Peterson, who apparently is a Seattle area native, or I guess Bellingham area native. So credit to him for giving us a
double agent
there. Yeah, and they had one soft DPI, but like it was very nice to see our team not put ourselves in a position to get a bunch of drive-killing holds. I mean, Jermaine Ifedi had one false start. He's Jermaine Ifedi. You're not going to get a perfect game out of him. And he had a couple times.
I'm pretty sure they account for that in the game plan. All right.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah. One false start and three random plays where Russell Wilson gets crushed. That's just what you get out of Jermaine Ifedi. You got to live with that. But the rest of the offensive line was super clean, just really clean performance. The upgrade from Reese Odiomba to Dwayne Brown is going to get more and more impactful every week as Dwayne Brown gets more and more hooked into what the Seahawks are doing. But he's really good. And I flagged this on Twitter, but there was a play where like he got driven back, and he got driven back in the way where like he prevented the rusher, it was their rookie, the guy Barnett out of Tennessee. He didn't let him bend the edge, but because Russell Wilson does that thing sometimes where he doesn't step up in the pocket, but he keeps like sort of leaking back, it wound up looking like Dwayne Brown blew his block, but he didn't. And they were showing the replay and they're kind of like, ah, oh, Dwayne Brown, you know, he's not 100%, but actually what you're seeing is like pretty good offensive line technique. And then you just see out of nowhere Jermaine Ifedi's guy just crush Russell Wilson right in the face, and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. The problem is still the problem. It's still at right tackle, but 7-8 weeks ago, Jermaine Ifedi was arguably the best offensive lineman we had. Now he's the problem. It's like, it's so different. We have a league average offensive line, Grant. It changes everything.
It's so funny because it's quite literally from left to right, opposite ends of the spectrum for the Seahawks. And you look at Dwayne Brown, and Luke Jokel got beaten pretty bad on some plays tonight, but overall he had a pretty clean game. But you go from Brown and Jokel and Britt to Posick and Ifedi, but you know, when you just completely look at Brown and Ifedi, it's two different players you're looking at, obviously. But
yeah,
you know, there's still good stuff to come from Jermaine Ifedi. He's still learning, he's still getting better, but you're gonna have those plays where you're like, oh, what was he doing? Or you know, those false starts or those holds. But overall, like you said, it was a clean game in terms of penalties. And I forget who tweeted this, but it was a tweet that said, this is what it feels like to play the Seahawks.
Yeah, it really was. It really was a full inversion, except for down the stretch, Carson Wentz couldn't muster real magic once we answered their big counterpunch. But I mean, those two so let's get into like the things we do. And I think it's worth diving right into sort of respecting the opponent. This was a 14-point win and a huge must-win game for the Seahawks that, I mean, it's going to, I'm not sure exactly what it does to our playoff odds, but I feel like if we had lost, it would have been like 30. And because we won, it's going to be like 75-80%.
They were in the sixth seed going into the game because Atlanta lost.
But still, because Atlanta is the tiebreaker over us, this was such a huge game. Yeah. And it also gives us a strength of victory adjustment that's big in our favor, especially if we end up in a tiebreaker situation with Carolina, which could very well happen. Whatever. It's a huge win. But I will say this game was in a lot of ways narrower than the scoreline. And that's not to say that that's about the fumble or like the missed penalty, but it's saying that it was about, we executed well and the game flow played into our hands. We were in positions where every play that Russell Wilson wants to be able to check down to was open to him because we were getting into third and reasonable, second and reasonable. We were picking up chunks on first down. And early in the game, there was like a period of time where they kept getting the ball around the 50. We stopped them, got those sacks. They punted, pinned us deep, but we had a long drive to go up 10-0 that really changed the game, changed the flow. And then we obviously have the fumble through the back of the end zone that is the difference between a tie ball game and what ends up being at the end of the next drive, 17-3. So this game could have gone other ways. That isn't to say the Seahawks didn't deserve to win, but it is to say, A, this Eagles team is legit. I don't think anything we saw tonight should make us think they're a paper tiger. They are not the dominant force that their record in DVOA made them look like, but they are not anything other than a top five team in the league right now. And I think that that's worth saying. In the same way that when the Seahawks lose sometimes, we're like, yeah, but they were the better team. I don't think the Eagles were the better team tonight. I think they were real good. Also, Carson Wentz, not the MVP, not as good as Russell Wilson, definitely not as good as Tom Brady, but man, is he tough to take down.
He's got some stones, man.
Oh, man. Those two throws were outrageous. And, like, I saw, like, Seahawks Twitter, like, decide to turn on Byron Maxwell. I'm sorry. No.
That's in no way Byron Maxwell's fault because,
yeah, when Russell Wilson does that stuff, we aren't like, oh, man, how bad is that other cornerback? It's like, yo, that is 8 seconds into the play, and he's spotting a guy with, like, 2 yards of space between him and a cornerback and puts a pinpoint throw across his body one of those times as he was going to the ground 45 yards in the air. It's a throw that would make Russell Wilson feel envious. I mean, man, again, like Wentz missed some throws, but Russ misses throws. And this was the night where Russ finally put it together and played four quarters of great football. And it was a night where Carson Wentz really didn't do that. But Carson Wentz had a Russell Wilson-esque game in that when he was on for like a quarter and a half in the second half of a game that they could have given up on, he was terrifying. And they came back from and up their win expectancy at one point from like 3% to like 20% with that drive. And that was just all on Carson Wentz's cojones. So I just want to do my tip of the cap to the opponent on this one, because like as well as the Seahawks played, they had to bring their A game to do this in so many different ways.
Yeah, it was a game where the Seahawks played so well that even that kind of drive from Carson Wentz, you can allow that to happen because of the way they were executing all night, and it allowed them to respond the way that they did. And yeah, the Carson Wentz play, it reminded me of a Russell Wilson play, obviously, but it was different in that Russell Wilson, when he gets pressured and when guys are hanging on top of him, you know, he kind of flips it off to a nearby receiver or tight end, and Carson Wentz chucked it 45 yards downfield. Like, that's, like, one of the most insane displays of arm strength, and I can't have enough words for that. I said that might be the throw of the year, honestly,
yeah.
And it.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're going to see anything like that the rest of the year, so go ahead and crown it now.
It was such a good play, and we're going to get right back to you right after this with more coverage of this game.
We were mentioning earlier in the week that in these games, you look at Seattle's schedule, and you look at the losses, and you're like, yeah, but we played better than them. And you look at the wins, like, against the Rams, and like, oh, yeah, we were lucky to escape with a win because we weren't the better team. And this was just, like I was saying, a wire-to-wire victory against the Philadelphia Eagles. Really, you know, it puts the Seahawks in clear perspective as one of the top teams in the NFC. And that's what we were looking for, you know, coming into this show, coming into this week. We were looking to see where the Seahawks landed in the crop of teams in the NFC. And it was very, very helpful in helping us look at that because, you know, they just, you know, punched the Eagles in the mouth, basically.
Yeah, I got a Facebook reminder, like memory, about a piece I wrote 4 years ago for Grantland about when it was about the New Orleans Monday night game where we took that New Orleans team and sort of throttled them in a way that turned what was like a burgeoning good young Seahawks team into the class of the NFC. And then that propelled us on to win the Super Bowl that year. And I feel like if you look back that game, we had struggled with, we had gutted out some like brutal sort of wins in a couple previous weeks, but that was the game where this team got its swagger. And tonight felt like either we were going to hand the keys over to Philadelphia for the NFC, or we were going to say, no, we still have that swagger when we're at home in primetime and the lights are on and this dynasty continues. Now, we might not be the best team in the NFC this year still. Again, I don't think that this game should shift people into being like, oh, man, Seahawks are a top three team. I think we're in the conversation. I think we're in that like maybe 5 to 8 range more than anything else, but that doesn't really matter. What matters is this is still a team that is part of the championship conversation that has the ability to find that extra gear and execute. And man, they execute in all phases of the game, and we highlight them every week on this podcast. But I think we should just make it a thing of like every week post game, we're talking Bobby Wagner. And nothing speaks to this team's execution tonight and their capacity, their ceiling, more than Bobby Wagner's performance. When that dude tackles, guys get stopped, and he doesn't miss tackles this
no.
year.
No. Oh, my gosh. I want to interrupt you just for a second.
Don't,
because
please,
like,
please.
I see Bobby Wagner being involved in all of these plays, but like you were saying, he doesn't miss. He doesn't fail to execute on these plays. When he wraps someone up, they don't get out. No one escapes Bobby Wagner's clutches. And it's insane watching him from a week-to-week basis get seemingly more dominant. And he continues to build his case for Defensive Player of the Year. And, you know, I haven't watched enough of the other candidates to say
this.
Well,
we're about to over the next 2 weeks, but
right.
Continue.
But it seems like, you know, watching Bobby Wagner play, he's running away with it. Just seeing how flawless his execution is and how crisp, like, how crisp he is on all the run stops and how perfect he is, you know, defending tight ends and, you know, preventing, you know, pass plays from, you know, from becoming big gains by stopping the before anybody gets any yards after the catch.
And he got us off the field. It felt like over and over again tonight, he was getting us off the field. And really what he was doing was putting us in position to force them into third downs.
Exactly.
And then we weren't letting them execute on third down. We were getting to the pass. We were getting to the passer. We were stopping running lanes. I mean, they were able to run pretty well, but we didn't let any explosives happen. So I think you also have to give a lot of credit to Earl Thomas and Bradley McDougal. I mean,
yeah, Bradley McDougal balled out tonight. And there was a couple plays where it was kind of like, oh, come on, Bradley. But that was in the first half. And he played a clean game from that point on. And he almost led the team in tackles, if not for Bobby Wagner. And so, like you were saying, Bobby Wagner set up these third and longs. He had these plays during the game where it was a run play to Jay Ajayi or Corey Clement, and he'd stop them maybe a yard short of the line of scrimmage, and they wouldn't get past that. And it would set up these scenarios where the Eagles, it was going to be tough for them to convert, and they went for it a lot on fourth down because, you know, they weren't having success on third down. And, you know, we mentioned this earlier in the week that was going to be the biggest thing. You know, stopping this Philadelphia Eagles running game and making these third and long so you don't get in those third and manageables for Carson Wentz to convert with his feet. Like we saw earlier in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Like he
did. Well, and that's again where the game flow really went against them. By us being able to grab that lead and continue to execute on offense, we weren't a dominant offense tonight, but we were a really solid offense up against a top five unit. That changed the game, and it took the run away from them. They weren't able to use the run in a game-setting sort of way. They had to throw the ball, and while they were able to get a couple of huge plays, it also keyed off our pass rush, which had its best game, maybe of the year, certainly the best game from the edge rushers since Cliff Avril's gotten hurt. And it just, like, let our safeties do work. And like early in the game, they were there was a couple like miscommunications where Aguilar was on KJ Wright and Bobby. And like, it wasn't ideal, but by the end of the game, his big play was against a cornerback, which is what we want. We were getting our right personnel matching up with their personnel in ways where they weren't able to exploit us. Now, in that case, they had a rub route. Nelson Aguilar is faster than Byron Maxwell. Carson Wentz eluded four tackles, and Maxwell doesn't have the closing speed he did 5 years ago. Okay, they're going to get it. But, like, that's actually where we want to be. That showed more than some of our big plays in the first quarter that our team was playing the game on our terms, which is really huge and really cool. Yeah, we haven't done that all year.
It was so awesome to see that.
It was like such a relief. We just haven't been able to do that all year.
I feel
we've been playing other teams' games, and tonight the Seahawks played their game. It was awesome.
I feel like this was the first game, maybe all year, that we were just able to breathe throughout the whole game. And I think that I'll say this before we go on to a short break, but this speaks to how good the pass rush was tonight and how good Carson Wentz is and his escapability. These are plays, these are rushes that are going to sack Blake Bortles next week. Like, they're going to get to Blake Bortles, and, you know, if not for Carson Wentz, you know, this Seahawks team has a handful more sacks. Like, he was great in escaping sacks and dealing with pressure, and they even got to him a few times tonight. So, you know, I can't say enough about, you know, this defensive line. And even though they were a little bit soft in the run game at times, you know, they were on point tonight. And we'll be back with a lot more stuff, a lot more Seahawks praise after this. We are back, and really the Seahawks are back. I know that, you know, they've always been there, and they've always been one of the heavyweights in the NFC and really the NFL. But, you know, this was a statement win, and it puts them back, per se, in the conversation. And it was kind of like, you know, don't you forget kind of game for the Seahawks. Like, you know, we're still around, we're still kicking. You know, like we said, you know, they played their game in Seattle in prime time, and, you know, they balled out on their stage. And I'm going to go over a few things that I saw tonight that I liked. I know that there could be a laundry list, but I'll narrow it down. And I'll start by saying, you know, Russell Wilson is amazing. Yeah. I think, you know, in my mind, you know, I know Tom Brady still exists, but, you know, he can be an NFL MVP. And, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but Bobby Wagner continues to be insane. And, you know, I had to look this up because I think this is a legitimate possibility. But, you know, 1994 was the last time the NFL MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year were on the same team. It was with the 49ers, and they had Steve Young and Deion Sanders. And the 2017 Seahawks could very well have the MVP in Russell Wilson and the Defensive Player of the Year in Bobby Wagner. Now, I know that, you know, doesn't equal Super Bowl, but it's really cool, and it'd be really nice to see these guys get, you know, something that they deserve in these kind of awards.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think if they do win out with the injuries that they've had and end up putting up 12-4 and therefore winning the division because they'd have the tiebreaker over the Rams, I think that there would be a legitimate case to be made for both of them. I just wanted to say that because if short of that, I don't think Russ is going to probably get there unless Tom Brady falls off a cliff, which he could. And I'd love to see it in the literal sense. Yeah. But I think if we run the table, there's a real argument to be made.
Yeah, and exactly, because it separates the Seahawks from the Rams because they sweep them if they run the table. And they sweep the division, actually. They go to Jacksonville, they win, they beat the Cowboys in Dallas on Christmas Eve. And, you know, it's an impressive resume to close out the year. And it's almost what's expected with the Seahawks to close the year. But with this team, it's different because of all the injuries that they've, you know, had. And, you know, what they've had to deal with and how they've had to, you know, adjust to all this. And so for Russell Wilson to carry the offense like he's been carrying it has been insane. For Bobby Wagner to be the engine of this defense, a defense that, you know, shut down the NFL's best offense tonight, it was incredible to see. You know, I can't ever get tired of watching Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner play football. You know, Bradley McDougald, we talked about him. You know, he was everywhere making tackles. He was, you know, defending the pass. Shaq Griffin continues to be a baller. Frank Clark was an absolute animal in the pass rush, and he even had a really good run stop on the goal line. And Sheldon Richardson is my father. I'm gonna end it there.
Yeah. No, and I think that if you look at that defensive line, what we saw was a lot of good rotation. There were a lot of plays where Bennett was lined up on first down at that right defensive end spot going at Vitae, which made them uncomfortable to pass on first down. But then when we were in a sort of NASCAR package, Bennett moved over to the left, Frank comes in on the right, and is attacking, and you know, you have him attacking Vitae now, and it's just a totally different issue for Vitae, who's a very, as we talked to Locked On Eagles about, Vitae is a very good backup tackle and a very good run blocker, but he's not a very good pass blocker. And you could see that we were just giving him fits all night by throwing a couple different looks at him, and then still having enough talent on the other side of the ball to keep Lane Johnson occupied. Lane Johnson had a really good game and contained Michael Bennett pretty much whenever those two lined up against each other. But over the course of the game, we were able to wear their offensive line down, which is exactly what you want. I just saw the stat flash up on Twitter. They had 74 plays and scored 10 points. Like, come on. Like, that's just really good efficiency from our defense. Ah, it was just so good, man.
It's so good. And you know, he wasn't, you know, at any time a world beater, but can we have just, like, not a round of applause for Mike Davis, but, you know, at least recognize it, what's the best game that a running back has had since J.D. McKissick's game against the Colts?
I, like, sort of, like, snarkily tweeted that Alvin Kamara has more highlights in any given game than the Seahawks running backs do all year. Mike Davis managed to have, like, a real highlight tonight. He, like, put some guys on sleds and hit for an explosive run. And we're just missing that right now. And Davis has given it, and McKissick has given it a little bit. And obviously Carson gives it when he's healthy. And the theoretical idea of CJ Procise does it too. Well, we're not seeing it from Rawls and Lacey. And it's annoying that it took us this long to get here. And our run blocking still is not good. It's good as our offensive line looks and pass blocking. A lot of that's Russell Wilson, but a lot of it is that line's really grown, really given him the chance to do his magic. they're not getting a ton of push. We don't have that yet. So it's really nice to see a running back make some guys miss and then turn that into an explosive play. There have been too many times where we've seen a running back, whether it's Eddie Lacy, whether it's Thomas Rawls, make one guy miss, but then there's another guy unblocked. And it's like, what kind of run design sends you at two unblocked defenders? Tonight, we were able to see a lot of one unblocked defenders and turn that into positive yardage.
Right.
Kudos to Tom Cable, I guess.
I guess. We mentioned, you know, there's going to need to be variance in the running game going into this game. And we saw a little bit of that.
Yep.
And, you know, something that we also said, and we're going back to it about stuff we said on the show, but, you know, the Seahawks really executed the way that we would like to see them in that, you know, we talked about containing Carson Wentz. And I said that they'd have to be aggressive and going for the ball once he passes the line of scrimmage, or not even when he passes the line of scrimmage, but when he takes off and runs, because, you know, last year he had 14 fumbles. Coming into this game, he's had 7 on the year. There's an opportunity there to cause a turnover, and that's what we saw tonight in that incredible strip and what turned to be a touchback and flipped the game right on its head.
Most important play of the game, and it's, you got to give credit to a couple different guys. Obviously, Sheldon Richardson makes that strip. I feel like Frank Clark's, he wasn't going to get in the end zone, and we were going to have third down to stop them again. So that's an incredible play in and of itself. And Clark, I think, was the one to wrap him up from behind. And then Earl Thomas comes in and goes for the karate chop strip and hits him in the head right as Sheldon's stripping him. And, like, that combination, you know, like, all of that, like, that is the defense working in concert to, A, stop the play, B, have two different guys trying to strip the ball in two different ways. So you not only have that sort of sound tactic, like technical execution in terms of their hawk tackling, but then you have two different guys going for the ball. It's just so good. Well, it's just such good execution.
I'll say this, and it's just, it's reminiscent of the Seahawks defense of a couple years ago, you know, the kind of bend don't break mentality.
Yeah.
And the swagger that we saw tonight, it was just, it was incredible. We saw on the play that they were damn sure he wasn't going to get in the end zone, but they went for that turnover. They were the opportunistic defense that we've been used to seeing over the past few years. And it was a little bit of a throwback game for Seattle in that sense. Like, they were going for the ball. They had, you know, an interception that was kind of a gimme. It was kind of like a punt throw. But at the same time, you know, it's them being opportunistic that leads to, you know, the Seahawks separating themselves from their opponents in games. You know, I said that, you know, we were able to breathe in this game, and that's because of these turnovers. It's because of these plays that swing the game. I'm guessing that forced fumble swung the win percent, the win expectancy for the Seahawks by a large margin.
I'm sure that was the biggest one, because if they score, it goes right to 50. And without it, I'm sure that we were, you know, I'm sure that was a 20-30% swing. And as big as those two Carson Wentz throws were, the Eagles never got really above 20-25% to win the game. So they never really had the chance to have a bigger swing coming back. I also want to highlight on the other side of the ball how clean the pass catching was all night.
Yeah.
Doug Baldwin had an incredible catch behind his body on third down early in the game. Midway through the game, that kept a drive alive. It was huge. Jimmy Graham, again, being able to find him in the end zone. Nick Vinette, like, showing himself to be a really good tight end. He's having a nice couple weeks. Yeah, he's having a really nice couple of weeks. And I'm really excited about what he's doing. Lockett had a touchdown. McKissick had a touchdown. Richardson had a nice catch and drew a big pass interference. You know, you had a lot of good things happening from all over the field. It was really great, and it's going to make it fun. Should we hand out some game balls?
I think it's worth mentioning, and it's a couple guys that I mentioned earlier on the show on the defensive side of the ball. Spike, who receives your game balls on defense in this win versus the Philadelphia Eagles?
I'm not going to do what the cheat would be, which is to give it to Chris Richard. I think he did a great job of dialing up blitzes.
That Justin Coleman blitz was packaged perfectly.
And KJ Wright bringing pressure on that fourth down. I mean, he called a great game. Pete and him have clearly coached up the reserves on this defense to step up, do that next man up stuff. But again, I think weirdly, you got to look at I mean, Griffin would be a fine option. Bobby Wagner is always a good option, but I think you got to look at that D line. Last week, we flipped a coin between Sheldon Richardson and Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett wasn't quite as dominant this week because he drew that Lane Johnson task and had that offsides. So for me, it comes down to Frank Clark, who had his best game in weeks and was exploiting Vitae and Sheldon Richardson. I think we got to give it to, oh man, I'm going to flip another coin. Heads or tails, call it.
You know what? I played both sides of the coin in flipping this game. I mean, in picking the game. So I'm just going to do this. I think both of these guys deserve the game ball.
Hey! Amazing. We just cut the game ball in half. Grant, do you have thoughts on an offensive game, Paul?
Well, I mean, it's worth mentioning that we always could pick Russell Wilson for this.
Yep.
I liked the creativity at times for Daryl Bevel, too. But I guess Doug Baldwin had a really good game. He you know, created a lot of separation against the Philadelphia defensive backs. He had, you know, what would have been a touchdown if he kept his balance. But, you know, he had the catch that he had to make the adjustment on mid-air. I think we saw a really sound game from all the receivers. So I'm giving it to the receiver group. It's a group.
Interesting.
It's a group game ball night. We're giving it to a couple guys on the defensive end of the ball, and we're giving it to the wide receiver group, who it's pretty sound. Russell Wilson spread the ball everywhere. He had the Jimmy Graham throw. He had the J.D. McKissick throw. Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett.
I would have gone. See, I guess I'm a trench man. I would have gone with Brown or Britt. Weirdly, I just think that offensive line stabilizing is so important. That said, they're really just clearing a bar that was set so low. But they Fosbury flopped over it. So credit goes to everybody. Credit goes to the coaches throughout. I just think really, really good game.
We're That's over tonight. We're handing out game balls to everybody. Everybody. You get a game ball.
Game ball. Look under your seat at home. You're driving right now. Look at your pedals. They're two game balls. Look up. You're in a car accident. You made a huge mistake. Don't look down while you're driving, while you're listening to a podcast. That's crazy, man.
In no scenario could we get a game ball under your feet during this podcast.
Ooh, all right. Well, so this was a hype cast, and it was very fun. And you know, you should use this moment of euphoria to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Think about playing a little draft.com. Think about leaving that 5-star review with your Twitter handle in it, so you get that PFF Edge membership entry possibility. But the rest of this week could get a little dour because, God, we got to go play this Jacksonville defense. Grant.
I will say to close, on a positive note, I think that the Seahawks offense can do more against, I will say, a spectacular Jacksonville defense than a Jacksonville Jaguars offense can do against the Seahawks.
And I just want to say, man, thank God for Dwayne. If we did not have Dwayne Brown going in next week, I'd be like, we'd have to pre-reserve a room in the hospital for Russell Wilson. As it is, I'm feeling medium confident.
Yeah, I think the Seahawks can go into Jacksonville and pick up a win, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be, you know, they're going to have to earn it. It's going to be one of those crappy 14 to 10 games or whatever it may be. But use this opportunity to go leave a review with 5 stars saying run the table and you will get a shout out on this podcast.
Yeah,
that is my word. And,
yeah, well, yeah, and credit again to Evan over at Hawkblogger for pushing the Run the Table momentum. I think he might have, like, shirts that he might sell around Run the Table to, like, raise money for charities. So you should probably follow him on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter if you're not, Spike Friedman and Greg Goldberg. And, yeah, just get hyped right now because, you know what, Seahawks are probably going to go to the playoffs again now. And if they had lost tonight, we'd all be like, oh, boy, are they going to make it at all? And now I'm like, yeah, let's get confident. Let's get weird. Let's. Oh boy, you have to bleep it out, Grant.
I'll bleep it
out. Let's win. Let's go to the Super Bowl. Why not?
Super Bowl. We're sticking by our mid-season prediction of the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. Let's go there. Let's win it. Let's celebrate. But for right now, let's celebrate this win against the Philadelphia Eagles. For Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.
Run the table.